It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. My man Mike Ward on assignment this week, which hopefully involves chasing a turkey, catching a fish, or maybe both out there, but glad to have y'all along. And this hour, talking to our buddy and Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, the crowd goes wild for Chuck Sykes. Hey, Chuck.
Howdy.
Are you, am I, at this point, means I'm not interrupting a turkey hunt, or you did lay off a turkey to talk to me? Which is true?
I made a run to meet with you today.
Okay. Good. I do want to get into this chasing turkeys other places, but before we do, of course, as always, I want to talk about chasing turkeys at home. And y'all, yes, we got to talk a little bit before we started this morning with the show. There's this consensus now. It's not scientific, and it's definitely through the good old boy Telegraph that this has been a weird season for turkeys. Now you got the scientist and you got the turkey hunter in you. Has it been for you? Is this a weird season?
For me, it's been a really good season.
Okay,
but I mean, look, I've got access to some really good properties that are managed well and could keep hunting pressure down. And we've sat down to birds in Alabama the days that I've been. We work birds just about every day. I can honestly say this is probably one of the first times that I've hunted in Alabama and have always heard a turkey gobble in the morning. But now, unlike you who hunts every day, I can't do that. So, you know, I've picked my days. I've gone on some good days, and it's been really good for me.
Okay.
But I haven't hunted every day like you have.
You
so
see,
I'm sure
keep
solid.
On. Keep on with it. There's some days I didn't go. There's like three. I did.
Okay.
Listen, that's another trail to go down. We might at some point, you know, this, you and I have talked personally a bunch about it, where it's like they didn't read the book. The gobblers didn't read the books that I've read. I've been on foggy mornings and heard just tons of gobbling and just getting after it and coming. They're not supposed to do that. It's foggy. And then the next day be one of those, if you and I were writing a book or, you know, videoing what it should look like for a turkey hunting morning, and I hear half the gobbling. I'm like, wait a second. Y'all were gobbling when it's foggy and it's clear now, and y'all aren't gobbling this much. What the heck's happening?
It's like that everywhere, man. I've got buddies that I've talked to just like you have. I talked to one yesterday that said, man, I've sat down to one turkey in the past 6 days that I've been and hunted him one day, and he had a bunch of hens and gobbled his brains out and went back three other days and he hadn't heard a peep. So, yeah, it's – look, they're turkeys. They got – nothing to do and all day to get it done.
So you've had this good season, but you have, obviously, talking to buddies like me, I was recounting before we started the show, that just, not just mine, but guys I hunt with around here, and then some that have been traveling. I went to Florida and hunted Osceolas this year. I heard enough gobbles and killed a bird, but I heard, you know, the guides down there said, yeah, they're not gobbling as much as normal. I've heard from some guys that do a podcast, some guys out there, you should work with Primos, and they got some pretty good places to hunt. They said they've been kind of off and kind of weird this year. You know, they had good days and they've killed birds, but there's been days that you would think it's supposed to happen and it didn't. Some other guys that went to Texas, and I mean, if there was a subspecies of gobbles, dang it, it's the Rio, and they said they went out to Texas for, I think, 2.5-3 days, and I don't think they heard a gobble. So it seems like it's something that's maybe broader than just Mobile County for me.
Yeah, and look, I travel. You know that. I've hunted Alabama, Louisiana, Texas, and North Carolina. so far and got a few more states to go and hunted 2 days in North Carolina. Birds gobbled really good, called up three birds the first day, and guy shot one, called up two the second day, and just I was a shooter, and I just wasn't as mad at them as I usually am, and I let them walk. They were about 45 yards, and I just didn't want to shoot one that far.
Mm-hmm.
Louisiana was one of the most beautiful, pristine mornings, and I didn't hear squat, just like you're saying. I finally found a bird at 10 o'clock for the guy that I was calling for, who had never killed a turkey, and a turkey walks up, and he misses him. So didn't hear a guy. But had a turkey come in. And then we went from there to Texas, and it was probably the worst year that I've had in Texas. And it was what you're saying. It was crazy. It was like I was hunting Alabama birds. You'd sit down to a group at daylight. They would gobble 8 or 10 times on the limb. When they hit the ground, whoop, nothing.
And that's, and that's for people, and I've only gotten to go that one time 25 years ago or so to hunt Rios, but it was insane back then. But they have they got a reputation. They gobble, right? I mean, for people who hadn't hunted them, the fact that we're saying the Rios didn't gobble on the ground, that is strange.
Yeah, they gobble all day. I mean, you could sleep in and go out at 10 o'clock, and as long as it's not 110 degrees, you can typically get a turkey kicked up and he'll gobble. He might not come to you, but he'll gobble at you. And this year was just, there was a couple afternoons I did not hear a turkey gobble. And, you know, that's things that you remember because it just doesn't happen.
Right. Yeah. You don't think here are the days in Alabama I didn't hear one gobble. That's a thing that happens, but that does stand out if you're in Texas hunting Rios.
Yes, it definitely does. So it was odd. I have no idea. I wish I could tell you what the reason was, but I have no clue.
Well, okay, so let me throw this out. As a turkey hunter and a biologist, a theory hey, what do you think about this? That has been, people have texted me and called me about. I've heard it two different places. Well, one from down in Florida where the guys down there said their hens weren't as vocal as normal. Because he said, and now I believe it because we saw it on one of these places, that they had such a big crop of jakes that hens were real scared to cut or do anything boisterous because that'd bring the jakes to them. And there's a mob of them out there. So he said, man, my hens are kind of quiet. It's been different there. To another theory back here, this was from back here in Alabama, a place where they're not hearing the gobbles. Their theory was they've got a mob of jakes too on the place. And they said, the gobblers are tired of getting ganged up on by these packs of jakes, and that's why they think their gobblers aren't gobbling. So either of those hold any merit from a scientific perspective?
I don't know from a scientific perspective, but I know from 40 years of hunting them, it does. I've seen it over and over again in different states and different times, and that was one of the things in Texas. There were several of us that went, and the first morning I went to a spot that the outfitter knew that there was 5 longbeards on this particular farm. I had 2 shooters with me, had my wife and a friend, and I think I called up 12 gobbling and strutting jakes and never saw the longbeards. And my buddy went back that afternoon and saw them. All the longbeards, and they didn't gobble, they wasn't strutting, they were just walking around picking. So yeah, I've seen it, especially in Texas, where you get 8 or 10 of those little thugs running around. But, you know, they can make it miserable. The rednecks come out in me a couple of times hunting places where after about the third or fourth time they run turkeys off that you've been working, and you know, if you want to act like a big boy, I'll treat you like one.
Yeah,
you're going to lose about half of them anyway, so you might as well eat one.
That's another thing. It's great. I wondered about that. So my buddy and I were talking about that. How many of those jakes, once they're up to this, level, how many of them how many of those will become a 2 or 3 year old, longbeard?
About half of them.
About half of them.
And, you know, it's all property. It's like anything. It's all site-specific and everything, but just a good rule of thumb. If you've got 8 jakes running around, you'll probably have 4 2-year-olds next year. Maybe 5 if you're lucky.
Is it because those jakes might move on to other properties and find other areas or something kills them? Or
They might leave. Mortality, I mean, they're not the brightest light bulb at that age, so a lot of them get killed. That's just part of it. They just don't make it.
And there's something to be said here that if somebody's theorizing the reason why longbeards may not be gobbling as much and they see a ton of jakes on there, that's after 40 years of hunting turkeys, that's not a bad theory.
No, it's absolutely not. I mean, I've watched it where you'd be working a gobbler and he would kind of look over his shoulder and gobble at you and then strut a little bit, look over his shoulder, and then all of a sudden, here they come, and it's like, crap. So, you know, after a couple of days of that, he just kind of sneaks in and looks. He's not going to gobble a bunch because they're out there waiting.
Make a good point. I mean, we always think, those gobblers stop gobbling because of predators out there. Maybe it's their competition out there. We're coming right back. More with Chuck Seiss, Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. My partner, Mike Ward, on assignment. Speaking of turkey stories, too, we might have to talk about this one with our guest, Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Chuck Sykes. Hey, Chuck, our man Mike Ward is a bushwhacker. Did you know that?
It does not surprise me at all. Drinks bushwhackers or bushwhacks turkeys?
Well, he didn't drink, so it must be bushwhacking turkey. He told the story a couple of weeks ago. It was real interesting. So he'd hunting somebody else's property. He talked about, and you know, Mike, I mean, he is patient, has the patience of Job. He'll lay with turkeys all day long. And I say lay with them. I mean, he won't move. And but he had this bird. He's on somebody else's property, and he gobbled, probably had hens. It's been a couple, 3 weeks ago. Wouldn't come to him, wouldn't crest a hill where he would have a shot. But the next day he goes in, after he tells a long story about that first day's hunt, next day he goes and sits and doesn't touch a call. The turkeys are around him and doesn't touch a call. And about 2 o'clock that afternoon, the hens came by him with the strutter in tow and he killed him.
Yep.
Never touched the call.
I'm not that mad at them anymore, man.
I don't know that I could. I mean, there's some places, and Lord knows I hunted my decades on, you know, highly pressured public land and all that, and I know how to stay off a call, but not calling at all. I don't think I have that ability. The Lord did not give me that strength.
No, I go to call and to hear them respond and to work them. Just killing a turkey to kill a turkey. I'm not saying I won't ever get in that position again, but I hope not.
You need to see the hooks on this turkey is something. We in the last segment we're talking about jakes and their effect on goblin. So the term super jake gets slung about. What is a super jake? I mean, what makes does he have a regular jake versus a super jake? What are we talking about?
There's nothing. Other than this is just my opinion. When people say a super jake, they're either a real late hatch the year before or real early hatch that year, and you know their beard may be 4 inches long, and they may be gobbling and have almost a full fan. That to me, that's they're still a year old bird. They just may be a real young 2-year-old or a real old yearling that thinks they're a big boy.
Yeah, they got held back. I remember those kids in school. They were a foot taller than me, you know. But because I mean, you see them, like thinking back the last week or so, I've seen Jakes that have a nub, you know, of a beard starting. And like you said, ones that have a 4-inch beard, and danged if you don't see them, they get in the road and strut.
Yep. And we saw that in Texas, especially, well, in Louisiana too. I called up a sack full, if you want to call them Super Jakes. They had 4-inch beards, and, you know, I chased them for half a morning, thinking they were big turkeys. I mean, they were ripping it. And if we hadn't have been in a place where you had to definitely identify the bird before you shot, a couple of them wouldn't have made it through because they was picked up over the ridge, and after you had been listening to them drum under the hill and gobble for an hour, and then you'd see a head periscope up, but just, you know, you couldn't shoot Jake, so I had to wait for firm identification, and, you know, here they come.
And it, so, you talk about that goblin thing too, and turkey hunters probably nod their head along with us. I mean, young non-super Jakes, regular government-issued Jakes, you can hear that when they try to gobble, you go, okay, that's but I have absolutely been fooled. I said, man, listen, that man, he is fired up. Let's go to that. And it comes out, and it's a dang Jake.
Yep. And same thing the other way. Our last morning in Texas, it was just kind of a Hail Mary. We were going to go for an hour or so. And as we talked about, turkeys hadn't been working good. They hadn't been gobbling good. They weren't responding good. And I had GG, and turkey was gobbling. The first time I yelped, he cut me off and was just gobbling like they were supposed to coming in. And I said, that's a Jake. There's no way. And it was half gobbles and sounded terrible until he popped around the corner 30 steps and he had a 9 or 10 inch beard. It's like, well, crap.
I don't know because if I've ever.
Weren't ready. We were just sitting there. Here comes a Jake. Here comes another one of those Jakes. And no, it's a big boy.
Now you've confused me. Now it's even worse. So if I hear what I'm pretty dang sure, listen to that. That's a Jake. In this case, it wasn't. It was a Tom.
Card carrying, full grown bird, and we're sitting there with guns in our lap because that would, you know, I had been Jake several days, and I'm like, well, crap, here comes another one of them little jokers. And oh no, big boy steps around the corner and is like, well, we weren't ready.
I gotta ask you too, thinking about the number of places you've hunted turkeys, I'm gonna break it down this way. We're gonna stay within the Easterns before we go further. Favorites, like most of us at home, but the best Eastern hunting statewide that you've done in the last couple years, like one that might be a sleeper that we don't think of, what state?
Indiana.
Really? Yeah, Ohio. I wouldn't think Indiana. I wouldn't have thought about them.
Oh, yeah. No. Indiana and Ohio are really big birds, hard goblin birds, don't get as much pressure as our birds do. You know, of course, Missouri, you know, people think about Missouri and turkey hunting. And if you got a good place in Missouri, it's fantastic. But you wanted a sleeper, it would be Indiana. And up in that Midwest region, Ohio, Indiana, you can't beat it.
I guarantee you, I'd have missed that one on the test. Indiana.
Yep.
Wow. Subspecies-wise, let's break out of Easterns and talk about, I mean, is it Texas for Rios or Bust or elsewhere that you've hunted them?
No, I've hunted them in Oklahoma, hunted them in Kansas, of course, Texas. I mean, Texas has just typically got so many. If you find a good place and the time's right, it's crazy. It's nothing like hunting birds at home. I'd rather kill a bird on my own place because I know how hard they are and how hard it takes to grow them. But if you just want a good hunt, Texas is hard to beat. The Midwest states are hard to beat. Honestly, the Northeastern states I've hunted a few of them over the past few years, and it's a little unnerving because up there in most of those states, where down here is considered posted unless it says otherwise. Up there is considered wide open unless it says otherwise. So, you know, we've hunted turkeys out somebody's backyard, and it's a little unnerving. But
did you say where I come from, this would be the last thing we'd see before we get shot at?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. It just doesn't feel right. But hey, when in Rome, and turkeys are gobbling and working. So yeah, up around Connecticut, Rhode Island, it's pretty funny, but it's great turkey hunting up there.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering too. Because you talk about the Northeast, there's one of those states I'm very familiar with, and I've got, you know, a mother comes from there and got, you know, family there, and I hunt up there every year. Maybe the whole state's not like this, but South Central Pennsylvania, it's a lot like Alabama. Turkeys gobble, yeah. They get hunted. But maybe, I don't know other states like Connecticut and Rhode Island. They not get the pressure?
I can tell you my first hunt in Connecticut was 3 weeks into the season, and we hunted a piece of public land that was 320 acres.
Was that a city park? What were you?
Now, in all seriousness, in Alabama, 3 weeks into the season, a 300-acre piece of public land, those turkeys would have been dead 2 weeks before the season come in.
That's right.
We killed two turkeys and left two still gobbling.
On 320 acres that hadn't been killed 3 weeks?
320 acres, yes.
Okay, I'm going to need you to drop me a pin on that one to check it out. So it is different. Okay. I was just thinking because I know that Pennsylvania is more like Alabama, but I guess not everywhere is.
Yeah, and Rhode Island, they were walking around the towns. My buddy, that's the director in Massachusetts, they have nuisance turkeys in the cities and stuff. I said, man, look, I got a half a dozen people. All you got to do is write us a permit to go to Boston or wherever. We won't even take a shotgun. We'll put on a UPS outfit and carry a 9-iron, and we will fix your nuisance turkey problem.
Yeah, I want to hear your reaction to that, because you got about a minute before we go to break, but we can come back. That comes up all the time. Be a TV news story. Turkeys are attacking the UPS guy. And these things, that we'll all sit around and go, that doesn't happen in Alabama. Is it just a pressure? How does that happen there? I mean,
they are just so acclimated to humans and humans not being danger. They're asserting their dominance. You and I could fix it real quick.
I wonder if I'm just thinking of a plan with Alabama turkeys. If we can say, listen, we're of no threat. Just come on out and charge us. See what happens. But I mean, you see that stuff. It's like those videos come out and they're viral and everything. And we all back home go, what is going on there?
Yep. It doesn't make sense to me. I would take a flogging because I'd grab him. He might end up beating me, but we'd have a heck of a tussle for a while.
We come back. We'll get your theory on that too, because we got in a conversation I did earlier in the week about turkey predators and what it must mean for a bobcat to jump on a turkey. Coming right back. More with Chuck Sykes, Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward on assignment. He'll be back with us next week. Also, get back in our conversation with Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Chuck Sykes. But before I do, just heads up to, we talk about before season got started and the number of turkey banquets that go on beforehand, but also the West Mobile Golden Spurs banquet that follows turkey season, like the next day, Friday, May 9th. Out at the grounds, great event. This is one I go to most years here. Tickets available now. You can get your singles tickets, couples tickets. Jake's, those thugs, or a sponsor table. But this is at the grounds. Y'all know where it is, on Cody Road. And it's going on Friday, May 9th. Be a good time. See y'all out there. And a reminder, too, like I've said in the past, even for those of y'all that don't turkey hunt, which thank God you don't, because I don't want any more competition in the woods. We'll check in with the director on that. But even those of y'all don't, for seed programs and things the Turkey Federation does, even for non-turkey hunters, it's a great thing to get involved with. All right, back to our conversation with Chuck Sykes. I don't want to encourage more turkey hunters. I know, I mean, that's kind of what we need to do for more licenses, but, you know, I don't need more competition out there. That's what he gets.
I understand. Where are you coming from?
I say that just half in jest. All right, I mentioned this before we went to the break. We were talking a little bit about it. We talked about the turkey mortality. And I do want to get to what folks should be thinking about now for brood habitat and all that stuff. Yeah, if you're a turkey hunter, you need to think more about next season than the current season. But things that kill turkeys out there, and bobcats, pretty specialized, right? That's one of the things that God told them to go eat. Is that fair from a perspective?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I don't think they're out there that's all they're going to do, but if the opportunity presents itself, they're going to go after it. And I know you've seen it, and everybody else that's listening has. There was a social media video with a cat jumping 8 feet off the ground, catching a gobbler in mid-flight. So, yeah, they're wicked little predators.
Yeah, I don't think that they just wake up every day and they're getting turkeys. I don't think that at all. I just, as I look at the critters in the woods that get adult turkeys, we'll talk about what kills nests, but adult turkeys, bobcat, probably I'd put my money on a bobcat before even a coyote, but you may disagree.
Oh, yeah.
But I started thinking about that. What must that be like? And maybe in your years you've seen it. When let's say a 25-pound bobcat, that's a good bobcat, jumps a 20-pound turkey. Any of y'all that picked up a turkey that hasn't completely gone on to the next world in Valhalla know about the whipping you get from the wings and trying to keep the spurs out of you? A fully live turkey and a bobcat jumps on that gobbler? I don't know who to bet on.
Rodeo for a while.
Y'all picture that for a second. We gotta talk about it. I know it happens. But bobcat jumps on that turkey. That must be... I mean, I've seen... you know, the aftermath of it, but I can only imagine what it looks like when it goes down.
Yeah, a bobcat is impressive. They can take down a full-grown deer if they want to. So, you know, my money's going to be cat if he can get a good handle on him, but he probably pays for it.
Right. Oh, yeah, y'all think you watch some PBR, watch some rodeo when the... You know, here it is, Diablo is, John Cody's on Diablo, and they open the gate, and that bull sends him slinging. You got to imagine it's probably even more dramatic than that with the bobcat on a turkey's back, because not only is he bucking, he's also flying out there. That'd be something to see. And let's shift gears for a second, too, and talk about, you know, looking to the future, which, I mean, if you're a true hunter, you and I have talked about that. It's the fun of today at hunting turkeys, but to me it's the drive looking forward to make more turkeys. So one of the things that, you know, was a challenge was the number of hens that weren't getting bred. And so to have more time, you know, the way moving the season dates, more hens to get bred. Is there any science coming back on that? Are we turning the corner here?
Oh, if you talk to a bunch of your buddies and had good hatches the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Naysayers are going to say, it just happened. I sort of think it could be because we moved the season back a little bit and it gave them a little more time to breed.
Yeah, more heads. Because if people didn't hear it in the past and hadn't, it's kind of new to this, when y'all were doing poll counts and nest and did the science work and catching them, some of these hens that didn't have nest or poults is for a reason. They never were bred. That blew my mind years ago when I first heard that.
Yeah, the data showed that we're disrupting the breeding process. Their peak nest initiation is you know, right now.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the day, we were hunting a solid month before the season came in. So a lot of them, they were not getting bred. Or it was way later in the season, and we've talked about it before, like your does, if all of them breed at one time, the number of predators there, you can predator swamp them, and they won't kill as many. But if they're spread out over months, then the same number of predators can do way more damage.
Right. If people hadn't,
it just makes sense. Logically, it makes sense.
If people hadn't heard us talk about that before, once I mean, you kind of explained it there, but predator swamping, whether it be deer, or whatever prey animal out there, how does that work? What people hadn't heard that term before.
The way things are designed to go is breeding takes place in a confined window where all of the females are bred at one time. They're all having little ones at one time, so the predators cannot do as much damage. Let's just say you've got 100 deer, and they all drop, or they're all bred within a two-week period. They all drop within a two-week period. So the predators there will, let's just say, will take one-third of them. So you end up with 33 of them gone, and 66 of them make it. Well, if that two-week window goes to a month-long window, so they're dropped a quarter here, a quarter there, the number of predators can take a lot more. So your survival may be 45% instead of 66%. If that goes to a two-month window, then it drops even further than that. So the goal of Mother Nature is to breed at the same time, have little ones at the same time, so you can get more of them.
That's why, you know, people always look at and look at human beings. I guess we've just had the luxury that we hadn't been on the menu in a long time. But critters that are, it makes sense.
So the push the season back, I still don't think it's far enough, but it, I think it helped.
Okay. So we get these hatches that people have been having, but there's two parts to this. I like to make everything more complicated. So we get more hens bred. That's good. Nothing happens unless they get bred. They got a nest, and they pull off hatching some. The next bottleneck, and we've talked about some, but things I read and all that, had been that kind of, and I know it's different places, but Alabama generally had enough nesting habitat. Is that right or wrong? Do you think that generally?
Quality nesting habitat, it could always be better.
Okay.
But yeah, we've got places for hens to nest.
Okay. And yeah, we might go back in a second and talk about what that looks like. But they said the bottleneck was brooding habitat, that while there was places had nesting, they didn't have anywhere to take poults to. Is that, do you think that's a fair assessment of a bottleneck in our population?
Sure. You've got to get them hatched, then you got to get them fed and protect them enough to where they can start flying and get off the ground. So absolutely.
Because you've told me too. I mean, once that poult gets to the point, even if they're not pitching up to the top of a 40-foot pond, but they can get up off the ground, isn't it a big change for the survivability? Isn't that one of those places, if they can get up and pitch up at night, that a lot of those survive?
If they can get up on a limb, that takes a lot of the predators out of the mix.
Okay. So the faster they can get to that point, I don't know how long, you know, what's average, what's fast to get on flight. I mean, we look at it difference of days or weeks. What
probably
do we look
a couple
at?
Couple
of weeks?
Yeah.
Okay. So brooding habitat. I know this is probably this short question with a long answer, but what does that look like?
Well, a good portion of their diet for those first few months of life is insects. So what is brooding habitat? It's something that produces a bunch of bugs at a level from ground level to high that they could jump up and get. So is that an old field, that road edges? It can be whatever as long as it provides bugs that they can get to.
Well, I mean, people say, well, there's a lot of things I see bugs. But I mean, but bugs are drawn to certain things. The bugs are there because there's something to eat, right, for the bugs to eat.
That's right.
And,
that bug is okay, but you need bunches of bugs for a brood of poults.
And how, well, we're close to the break, but I ask you, the distribution of that too. I know this is getting pretty inside, but like, or a lot, like the distance between where your nesting habitat is and where your brooding habitat is, the further it is away, you might be getting some poults eaten along the way.
Yeah, I mean, you need everything, food, cover, and water in as small an area as you can, because the longer they're exposed going from point A to point B, the easier it is for critters to get them.
And that's, you know, you start thinking about, and this is a conversation we've had in the past on burning, you know, and we'll come back and talk more with Chuck Sykes, but that's always the thing. I mean, back, you go back a month and a half ago on our burn episode, and the reality is it's, you get everybody together on a Saturday, and it sure is easier to burn a 300-acre block than have them show up a bunch of weekends to burn 30s, but producing baby poults and quail chicks, smaller might be better. Coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Mike Ward will be back with us next week. He's on the assignment of trying to kill a turkey, which is a good thing. And I'm helping turkey populations some with keeping Chuck Sykes out of the woods for a second here, but I haven't helped because Mike Ward's out there balancing out the other way. Continue our conversation with Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Chuck Sykes. Okay, so, and just, I'm always looking to the future, and I think that's a good thing. If you really care about hunting turkeys, it's more about what happens next year, 5 years, and 10 years. What you're seeing out there, are we doing better on brooding habitat? I mean, I think I am. The last 5 years, I've kind of committed to that. But what do you see on the lands as you drive around the state?
Tell me what I'm going to tell you.
Well, you're going to say no.
It's site specific.
Yeah, that's
true.
Some
people are doing great. You're doing great. As a general rule, no, it's not getting any better.
Was that happening by mistake back in the 90s? You know, we all look back, and y'all, I'm not talking about the 1890s. I'm talking about the 1990s, when it seemed like there was a turkey gobbler behind every tree. Did we have good brood habitat then, or did we just have so many turkeys?
We had fewer hunters. We had plenty of turkeys, and there was better habitat. And just over time, things have changed.
Yeah. Well, if people want to get motivated, you like to hunt a turkey, and there's some charts out there. I know some of the guys from the University of Florida had done that showed, like, just mathematically with brood, you know, they nest success. Let's bring this many poults into the mix, and showed success with having brood habitat close, and multiplied over the years how many additional goblin turkeys that meant for a place. That should get everybody motivated. Do a little, whether they don't have to burn. I mean, burning's a good way to do it, but you can disc it up that same way. I mean, you don't have to use fire.
Yeah, soil disturbance. Sunlight and soil disturbance, be that disking, burning, dragging a treetop across the ground. I mean, just, you need sunlight and disturbance to create better habitat.
I know that on, you know, different WMAs in the state, people watch y'all's Facebook page. Y'all are burning. I mean, it's during... See, there's not many weeks go by that y'all aren't putting something out for a burn going on public land.
As long as the conditions are right, we have a, I mean, we need, I'm not saying it's a quota, but we have a target that we like to get to. And as long as we've got good burn days, we're going to light it up.
I like that. I like that, that, you know, you look at the example of what's happening. You're not just sitting saying, this is what y'all ought to do. That's what y'all are doing on our state lands.
Absolutely. The idea that state lands are not managed correctly is false. There's always better that we can do. And we will run out of time before we can get to everything, but we've got limited staff and limited money, so we have a list of priorities, and we pick them off as much as we can.
Oh, yeah, you talk about the equation. Ted DeVos and I talked about that one time. We did, like, give the time of year most people burn. And then into that equation, we put in birthday parties, rainy days, windy days, work obligations, church. You know, we started, I mean, it's hard to, you know, get all the burning done. But getting some done, sure, better than saying, you know, I'm not going to burn anything.
It makes a huge difference. I mean, it makes a huge difference.
I hate to shoot myself in the foot like this, but I'm going to ask you, because registration's over, people are hunting, it's going to be for next year. How are those SOA turkey hunts going?
You know how they're going.
I was on one of the first years on Cedar Creek. I told, you know, I think I've told that story on the air. It was, and I could, it's not like I'm spot burning because this is, you know, by draw, but Cedar Creek back then, that was early before, I mean, soon after y'all got it, and y'all done some management, but it was, I heard like 11 birds the first morning. It was insane.
And that place transformed over the past 5 years. We thinned a bunch of that cedar out on the hilltop.
Mm-hmm.
Burning, and you got prairie grass coming back, and it's fantastic.
Now, I know there's, you know, there are others. I mean, we can talk about Uchi, and we could, you know, in Portland and all that. But the one I went on was Cedar Creek. It's good to know because there were a bunch of birds then, and it was thick with those cedars back then. So that's gone now.
Yep. The good portion of that is gone, yes, and it is back into quality habitat.
So, enough said. Y'all will probably forget when it comes to putting your name in time, so I'll be safe to get in on to get in on that. People, not trying to start trouble here, but are they doing better with game check on turkeys this year than last year?
Just to be perfectly honest with you, I haven't even looked.
Okay.
I'll look at the end of the season. I just don't pay a whole lot of attention to it during the season. We'll see at the end.
I'm going to ask you a question you probably never heard before on game check and turkeys. With the statistics department, how much of sandbagging on spur length and beard length do you think you get when you put in?
I would say it's probably the other way around. I think it's probably a half-inch spur is an inch spur and an eighth.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, maybe you're right. I don't mean sandbagging. Yeah, it is the opposite. Like when you put it in there, I go, I wonder how many people, because I'll sit there and be like, be honest about that spur, Sean. He's a two-year-old. But he's got the option for me to say, yeah, man, he was between an inch and inch and a half.
Yep, absolutely.
So what are you? It'd be funny to talk to the statistical folks. Say, here's what y'all are math guys and gals, and I appreciate that. But John, I'm going to tell you a little something about a turkey hunter. He may overestimate the spur length on that bird.
Just a little bit. Most people do. And look, it's the same way with killing a 130-inch eight-point that ends up being 118.
Yes, that's right.
But you kill him, you make him as big as you want.
It's the number of speckled trout, 5-pound speckled trout that people catch that weigh 2.7 pounds. They're still good trout, but they're not. It's just funny. I look at that every time I'm game checking a bird. I go, well, you know, I'm tempted to say, well, he's over an inch. Then I go back and measure. I go, that is 3/4 of an inch. He ain't making that cut. But y'all, you know, you can tell lies on the app. At least say you killed that turkey. Chuck, as always, man, I appreciate your time. Thanks for taking some time with us.
Absolutely.
All right. Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Chuck Sykes. We'll do it all again next week. Mike will be back from assignment right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.